Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. It is I, your host, Caroline Foran, author of Owning It and The Confidence Kit. This week, my guest is the wonderful Angela Scanlon, TV presenter, broadcast journalist, woman with the most stunning red hair you've ever seen in your life. And she also hosts her own brilliant podcast called Thanks a Million, which is all about thankfulness and gratitude. And she has some really epic guests on there, so 100% recommend it and worth checking out. On this series, though, of course, the topic of conversation is Angela's experience of anxiety, and I just related to her story so much. The feeling of being at odds between how we present ourselves to the world and how we view ourselves privately is kind of at the root of a lot of what she talks about, and it's an incredibly common driver of anxiety. I really hope you find this episode as reassuring and familiar as I did. As always, thank you so much for your support via www.patreon.com/CarolineForan or via the Acast support feature, which is new, where you can give me a one-time tip for the series if you think that it's helpful. For now though, let's hear from Angela. Angela Scanlon, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All the way from London. Now, I have been dying to chat with you for so long because I know from our interactions on social media that anxiety, would it be fair to say, has definitely been a feature of your life?
Yes, I think that would be fair to say.
Tell me your story. To go back to the very beginning then.
Well, it's a funny thing. So I used to have a column for the Irish Independent, and I wrote about it. I wrote about it on there, and it was one of the kind of few things that I wrote about that was very personal, because even though, you know, I'm in the public eye, I'm also deeply private. And so that felt like something that I wasn't really ready maybe to share. So it was a few years ago, and I wrote about I was very reluctant to label it anxiety and to label myself as somebody who had anxiety, which is 100% my own issue. But it was like admitting to some kind of weakness or some kind of chink. This is how I saw it. So if I kind of labeled it, it gave it strength, it gave it legs, it made it grow, kind of. I guess I was quite afraid of what that meant for me, maybe. But really, when I broke it down, it's very funny because I've been doing kind of a lot of work and a lot of thinking. And, you know, my version of myself, you know, in work, but also my version of myself, like historically, has been, I was a very lively kid and I was full of beans and I was kind of very upbeat, like a big energy kind of. And so that was always who I thought I was. And then in teenage years, I became kind of my teenage years and my early 20s were a very difficult time for me. But That image of myself was always this very sparky, smiley, jester type person. But then when I really think about it, like me as a small human, I was deeply, deeply sensitive. And obviously, for whatever reason, you know, it was a busy house. I have three sisters. So there was like four of us under six and a half. And for whatever reason, that sensitivity, either there wasn't really space for that sensitivity, or I, through whatever experience, deemed it as like not acceptable. And I kind of shut that off. And only in recent years have I kind of really connected, I suppose, with that little person who was very, very sensitive. And that, you know, anxiety, which again, I didn't label it as such, but I remember my parents would go away, you know, and I mean, it could be go away to the shops, or yeah. I do remember they went to Lanzarote and their friends and their two kids came in and stayed with us for a week. And this was like four young kids. They probably went for 5 days, and it was, you know, for sanity. In my mind, I remember sitting on the edge of my bed every single day with this little teddy, like kind of rocking back and forth, really like consumed that they were gone. That was it. They were dead. They had either abandoned, or they were dead. Their plane had crashed. That was it. And so that kind of, yeah, like, and then when I started school, I remember we did this thing where we would go into school, so not quite junior infants, but we'd go into school and kind of just to get used to that, the formality of school, I suppose. So we didn't wear a uniform, but we'd hang out in the classroom. And again, that situation made me feel wildly anxious, and I would go and have to sit beside my sister. Okay. Who at the time was in, you know, senior infants, mortified. And but again, a very, very anxious, deeply sensitive little kid. So it was kind of always there. And I think I maybe just had ways of ignoring it.
It sounds like your coping mechanism from a very young age, even when you didn't understand it, was to appear to be, you know, full of energy and vivacious and strong. And that would, it sounds to me like that would maybe have set in stone this disconnect between what you put out there to the world and how you view yourself privately.
100%. And it's, and that is the thing that, oddly, when I started, like when work and I became better known, there was a massive conflict that really there was, I couldn't escape it any longer, because it was kind of this idea that hang on, the version I present to the world versus how I feel at home. And I kind of spoke about, you know, like giving all of my energy to work and coming home and being this shell, you know, and not really knowing which of those people was the real me, or was I a fraud? Was it this, you know, this act that I put onto the world, and then I'd come home and slump on the couch and my family would get the worst of me, you know. And I felt really conflicted by those, the kind of polarity, I suppose, of those two people that you know. And but actually I think that was exactly what I did. I presented, everything's fine, I don't need anything, jazz hands, game face on, here we go, I'm here to like lift everybody up, to make people smile, to whatever. Work and busyness as a way to escape those kind of difficult feelings of vulnerability and of need and of all of that kind of stuff was obviously uncomfortable.
How did it manifest for you? Like, did you physically have symptoms? Did you have panic attacks? And at what age were you when you felt like it really was kind of something you couldn't ignore anymore?
So, I mean, it's not that long ago, if I'm really honest. I think I was so disconnected from myself for so long that the first time, like I remember uneasy feelings and worry and tightness in my chest. But I, like I say, I had different ways of busying myself, you know. And I remember thinking, like, I would sit down, I'd read a book, I'd watch telly, I'd be on the phone, I'd be reading a magazine, and I'd be painting my toenails at the same time. Like one activity was never enough to kind of, to quiet my mind. I had to have multiple things at play in order to escape myself, almost. And I think I worked at a kind of rate that was, in hindsight, completely unsustainable. But it was, you know, because I was kind of trying to build a career in the UK and in Ireland at the same time, one in TV, something in fashion. I was trying to do writing. I was kind of living like three different lives. So if I got downtime in one, there was enough to be done in the other territory, you know. And so that consumed me for a long time. And I remember when I got married, I was filming Getaways at the time, and I literally had taken, we had kind of cancelled all notion of going on the idyllic, you know, honeymoon. And we were like, okay, we're going to steal 6 days in Morocco. And so we did that, but we then kicked our kind of honeymoon down the tracks. And a few months later, we went to France for 10 days. And I had always been like, again, looking forward. I'm so busy. But that holiday is when I'm going to feel right and normal and rested and human. And then I came to that holiday, and the anxiety that came out of sitting still and not being busy and not having all of these jobs and not having a to-do list and not having anything to kind of quiet my mind, truthfully, or distract me, it came crashing down. And I remember being in a car, and I've written about this, so it's like, and it sounds very dramatic, and I had no idea what was happening, but I was sitting in the car, and I felt like the roof of the car was coming down on top of me, and the doors were closing in, and I couldn't breathe. And Roy stopped at a set of traffic lights, and I jumped out of the car. I fled, and I remember, and I was hysterical, and I was bawling, crying, and I ran to the water. We were in, I can't remember where in France we were, but I literally had to get out of the car, and I ran. Like, it's so dramatic, it's like something from The Notebook, but it was it was this very visceral need that I had to flee. I couldn't sit with it, and I didn't understand it as a panic attack at the time. I actually thought I was losing my mind. And even talking about it, it was so frightening to me, actually, how fragile I felt and how like out of control my mind felt. And, you know, it was this, I suppose, the pressure of, and, you know, always looking to the next event. And this is what I did consistently. This job, if I get this job, it's out of reach, it's unlikely. If I get this job, then I'll be happy. Get that job, nothing. I get married, get the, like, have the beautiful idyllic wedding, then run back to work, go on your honeymoon, that's when it's perfect. And then still I wasn't really feeling these things. And I think when you have everything resting on those things giving you what you need and they don't deliver, then everything falls apart, because you're like, hang on, like, no, will I ever have, I am I broke, am I just broke, and that, like, happy thing is just something that's not available to me, and it's a big lie, and I can slap on my smile for, you know, for the world, but actually when I come and I'm, you know, with my now husband who I love and adore, and I'm friggin' jumping out the car door, you know, it was like, it was a really, really frightening place to be, and having, you know, kind of achieved what I thought was like, you know, relative success, but also stuff that I had kind of never dreamt would be possible to me. And still felt no sense of satisfaction, of pride, of, you know, I just couldn't give myself a break. I couldn't enjoy anything, is the truth of it.
God, it's so common though. Like, I think it's the same, like, it's one of the reasons why I kind of fear Christmas time, is because it's when you stop and all those kind of thoughts and that idle thinking can rush in. And when you're so used to being go, 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 you're pushing it out and out and out. And then of course it's going to hit you. And like, what happened to you was complete fight or flight response, triggered by space that was a void there that all those thoughts filled in. And then you literally, I mean, you probably did the best thing you could have done for yourself, was to get out of the car and run to the ocean and feel the water in your feet and let it happen to you. But I think it sounds like very similar to me, in that the scariest thing was not your realization that, okay, you've been taking too much on, or you're go, go, go. The scariest thing is the realization that you're capable of feeling like you could fall apart.
Totally. And also, I think, well, I mean, for me, I think the scariest thing was that I had had this list of things that were, if I tick them all off, then I would feel okay.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, lucky enough, and I worked really hard, and I was able to actually, at like a relatively young age, feel like I had ticked a lot of those things, and I still felt, you know, pretty grim actually. And that was the scariest thing, that at like whatever 32, I was like, is this it, this is not okay. I don't want to feel like this for the rest of my life. And I thought that all of those things would make me feel different, and the realization that, in a way, and this is it's the difficult thing to accept, is that, but it's also the gift, is the realization that none of that matters.
Yeah.
And when you really accept that, you can go, okay, like, I can do the list and I can do those things and they're all fun, but actually the work that I have to do is deeper, and it's me, you know, and it's not like fancy faddy things. It's not, you know, I can't pay for somebody else to fix me or to help me, you know. I have to really like get stuck in, basically.
And do you think now, looking back, that you had to reach that point of, I suppose, your version of feeling like you'd come grinding to a halt in order to realize, okay, well, what level of success will ever be enough for me? And, you know, how am I going to derive my sense of satisfaction if the goalposts are constantly changing? You're fighting a losing battle. You're never going to get there.
Totally. And to be honest, that incident was, it's, thank God I'm touching wood, was the only panic attack that I've had. But it wasn't, sadly, enough to, to properly change my course, but it probably was the start of it. You know, it was after that year that I went into like a really, really, really tricky year personally. Just, you know, with my head, I kind of, again, had, you know, on the surface and on the outside, amazing moments in my career. But this pretty, pretty dark time for me, I suppose. And I can't even remember what the question was, but I suppose I realized that I had to take it in hand, and that I had to take responsibility, I suppose.
So I suppose it opened the floodgates for you, really. And then it's the same as it was for me. Like, I, when my anxiety came crashing down on me, I thought it, like, for me, it very much was linked to, well, I thought it was linked to a change in jobs that didn't suit me. And I thought, okay, well, I leave this job now, that should be it solved. And really, the anxiety that it opened up was just the beginning. And it was going to be another year of like really thinking how much anxiety had actually had a hold on me my whole life. And this was just a catalyst that brought it about. And you often think, if you can tangibly link your anxiety to like, okay, I've got too much on, and if you peel back the diary, then you should be fine. And then when you're not fine, you're like, holy shit, like, how do I get out of this?
And I think actually, sorry to interrupt, I think that was, for me, the thing was, I'm busy, 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 busy. Yeah. When I'm not busy, I'll feel fine. When I go on holidays, I'll feel fine. Then I went on holidays, I felt worse. And it was like, where is the thing? Where is the place? What is the state that I will feel okay? And it was looking increasingly like there was no place to hide. And, you know, that term, wherever I go, there I am. And there was a sense of that. I kept creating these worlds which, if I could just step into them, I would feel fine, I would feel normal, I would feel relaxed, I would feel like the version of myself that was acceptable. And actually, I would then get there to this idyllic bloody chateau in the middle of France with my brand new husband, after having a year filming a TV show, like all of these things that in theory were perfect, in reality, like inside, I was in trouble, you know. Yeah. So it's
did you have a moment, can you remember a moment where I suppose it's something that would have been so unfamiliar to you, but you're go, go, go all the time. Do you remember having a moment where you had to sit with stillness and actually let yourself feel all of the anxiety and the horrible feelings and not run away from it, but actually confront it? And I think like that, sitting with that is the hardest thing, but the most important thing to get to a point of, I guess, owning your anxiety. And I also don't like putting labels on things, because I don't like thinking of myself as, oh, I'm Caroline Forn with anxiety. And I think it's something that comes and goes, and we all have a stress response that, you know, gets triggered sometimes, and some of us feel it more than others. I would never say I have a disorder, but that's just me. But I do think in being willing to sit with that horrible feeling is kind of the gateway to getting to know yourself almost.
You know, that's what we often try to do, is run away from those bad feelings. You know, we accept the good stuff, we hate the bad stuff, we feel. But what I realized was, as long as I denied and rejected the bad feelings, the negative feelings, whether that was need or vulnerability or sadness or loneliness or longing, if I rejected those, what I realized was that I was also completely turning the dial down on the good shit, like the joy, yeah, and happiness and satisfaction and pride and excitement and all of those things. And the realization that I couldn't pick and choose, and that if I wanted to feel the very heights of the good stuff, then I needed to be able to sustain and feel some of the other stuff. I was like, okay, that's a rite of passage. You know, the kind of good state, acceptable state is like, it's not, I'm so inarticulate. But
no, you're great. It's all pouring out of you.
It's pouring out of me. But the kind of idea that, like, if to be fixed, quote, yeah, unquote, fixed, would be only to feel the good stuff is such a load of balls.
Yeah.
That actually to be fixed is to allow yourself to feel all the whole spectrum. Absolutely. And to go, oh my God, I feel so, and it's still really new to me, Caroline. Like, it's still, yeah, really something that I'm properly learning, is to not, and I find, you know, distractions, I'll distract myself with food, I'll distract myself with technology, I'll distract myself with anything. And because that's my default, it's what I've done for 20 years or more.
It's how your body knows to survive, though, is to crave those distractions. You know, it's your body is trying really hard to keep you safe by, like, preventing you from falling into that hole of that feeling. Can I ask you also, like, in your line of work, and I would, you know, completely relate to working for yourself and chasing these projects, and you know, it's not like a full-time job where it's sort of static and, you know, you just go up in pay grade or whatever. It's always on to the next thing, always on to the next thing. But do you find, how do you cope with, like, social comparison in that industry? Because for me, it's a big driver of anxiety.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the reason that I set up my podcast was for this very reason. I realized that comparison, listen, we've all done it as humans since the dawn of time. But historically, you'd compare yourself to, you know, Jenny next door and maybe some bird in the village. But actually, yeah, now you can lie in bed, before you even get out of bed, you've compared yourself to the most astounding humans in the world. And, like, whatever you produce on any given day, if you're working from that place, is a disappointment.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, the kind of practice of gratitude for me was a massive thing and a massive focus. And so, like, the podcast enabled me. I remember somebody saying, you're the best teacher of the thing you need the most. And so, yeah, I would kind of flit from all of these different things and go, do you know what? Gratitude is the one thing that I can return to that actually is, like, really easy to do and shifts my perspective away from looking around at what I'm lacking, what I haven't done, what that person has done that I should have done, why didn't I think of that, and actually focusing on what I, like, have done and what I do have, and, you know, looking around at what I have achieved. And sometimes I know Instagram is the devil in many ways and in many people's minds, but, like, I will sometimes, if I feel a bit shit, scroll through my Instagram feed and go, yeah, like, I know it's a bit of a highlights reel, but actually it gives you a kind of picture of these moments that we can very easily forget, and these special kind of points in time, and whether it's friends or whether it's families or it's a lovely place that you visited, mm-hmm. and it kind of grounds you back in like the good stuff and stops you from looking around, because I do think comparison is such a it's
such a driver of anxiety. I mean, it really is. And like something I wrote about in my third book, which will be out next January, is and something that I didn't really want to. It felt kind of uncomfortable to admit it, but something that I've struggled with, and it's completely brought about by social media, is and working for yourself in this kind of thing where you're going up for these, you know, roles or these, you know, campaigns or whatever, that someone else's success will somehow take from yours. And I was really interested in that and where that goes back to. And it's really a feeling of a fear of scarcity from when we were, you know, evolving. And
it's scarcity, it's that kind of lack mentality, and I do think we're wired for that. And I don't know whether this is a controversial thing to say, but actually a lot of that is inherited. And yeah. Our parents, you know, Ireland has for the last, you know, like it's money and abundance is quite new to us as a country.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a historical kind of inheritance. So like my parents, my dad is one of 14. He grew up in in Mayo. They all had to leave when they were 14, 15 to move to England to earn a living. And you know, my mom is one of three, but they grew up in Galway and they were, you know, like there was not a lot around. And you know, they will have had stories from their parents where you make do with what you can, and you're lucky to have what you're given, and kind of I think it's impossible to escape that without really consciously working and recognizing that that's there in the back of your head, that just because somebody down the road has something doesn't mean you have less. There is enough. Mm-hmm. There's enough to go around, and I think you have to work really, really hard on breaking that belief, really, mm-hmm. that there's not enough.
Absolutely. Has there been anything, like any one book or even quote or song or something that anyone has said to you in the last few years that you've kind of clung on to as a bit of a life raft to help you to remind yourself when you get caught up in these feelings, that like was there a turning point for you?
Oh, was there a turning point for me?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I mean, I don't think there was any one moment
or even the biggest learning, the kind of eye-opening, okay, this is actually what I need to remember.
I think it's the process, and that sounds really cheesy, but actually it was the realization that in my mind I was like powering towards a place where I'd be fixed, and that actually that's never, and if I got there it'd be pretty boring. And so you know, that kind of idea of, I don't know, it's weird, I've been hearing a lot of people and things that I've been reading, and you know, surrender keeps coming up, and
yes,
like I have for all my life tried to control, you know, I'm manifesting things and this is exactly what I want and I'll write the list and I'll do the thing, and I'm actually really good at that side of things. If you're into that, like I I kind of feel like I know how to do that
yeah.
when I'm in the zone. But what I realize is that a lot of the time that's control as well. And you're going, this is what I want. And actually surrendering and being open about that and going, no, one of the things that used to make me anxious was, so what's next for you?
Yeah.
And I would be like, I'm literally just sitting here talking about the only things that I have going. Why are you asking me what's next? I don't fucking know what's next. And so I now kind of go, I don't know. And that is so exciting. The idea that, like,
yeah.
you know, life can go anywhere and I'm no longer kind of... You know, I love what I do. I love telly. The podcast has been a totally different outlet for me and it feels like a different thing altogether. But I kind of feel like I don't know. And in a way, I don't really care.
You don't need to know. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't need to know. And that actually, that feels so, it's such a relief.
Yeah.
To go, fuck it. We'll see what happens. It's not that it's in the lap of the gods and that feels kind of lazy. I feel like I'm, you know, trying to get out of work. But actually this notion that the only way work works is if you're doing it 24/7 and if you're toiling and you're pushing and you're pushing. And actually, mm-hmm. I think it's when you sit back and you like relax and you just allow things to come that like some unexpected good stuff comes into your life and that you have the space to enjoy it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the word relax there. What is your go-to? How do you really feel like your most relaxed self these days?
Oh, I love the garden. I'm such a nana these days.
Oh, lovely.
Like, first of all, yeah, lucky enough to have a little garden and I just find myself getting plants all the time. Like the rate at which they stay alive is questionable, but we're getting there. So yeah, I just kind of take off my shoes. I'm quite a hippie and I'll take off my shoes, lie in the grass, do a bit of earthing if you're into that. And just kind of hang out. Like I, again, put a bit of jazz music on, which is not me. It's some imagined version of a woman who has her life together. And so
lovely.
I put jazz music on and like have a drink. And yeah, just kind of hanging out. Like I've started meditating. I've like kind of dabbled with it for years. Actually, I did a transcendental meditation course around 10 plus years ago.
Wow.
When I was in Dublin. Yeah. And I was obviously really aware that things were not quite right. And I remember Constance Harris, actually, she used to be the fashion editor of the Indo. And I was like, oh, I just, you know, I'm not feeling quite right. And she was like, oh, maybe you should try this. And I was like, it was a lot of money for what I had at the time. And I went and I did that course and I kind of did it for a while and then I didn't do it and I dipped in and out and I've done retreats since. But meditation, in whatever form that is, I'm a bit more relaxed about what shape that takes now. I don't think it has to be you sitting on a mat, legs
no.
folded for 40 minutes. It can be just like being in the moment, like meditating by sitting and playing with my daughter or painting sticks. Or like, you know, yeah, eating my dinner in a mindful way, just not
yeah.
having my head running away elsewhere. So yeah, I just try when I can to kind of practice.
Just being in the moment, yeah. And, you know, I think this, at the time of recording, we're very much in the midst of the lockdown and the pandemic has been really shit for, I mean, most everybody, but there have been, you know, some benefits as well. Would you say you're maybe somewhat grateful for having, I guess, been given no choice but to slow down a little bit right now?
Yeah, and I imagine, like you said, if you were inclined towards looking around and comparing yourself, suddenly yeah. you're like, it's cool. Everybody's,
yeah.
You know, nobody's getting anything done. So the pressure's off me. And I mean, that's never supposed, you shouldn't be your driving force. And my sister, she's almost done. She's a psychotherapist and she's got a magazine called Cracked and she's amazing. She's very much in this world. And she was talking recently about racehorses. And she's like, there's a reason racehorses wear blinkers. And I was like, what do you mean? And she said, you're not supposed to be looking around like everybody. And, you know, Oprah talks about running your own race and that's easier said than done. But actually the discipline of of looking ahead rather than looking around, I think, is something that you also have to practice. But it's certainly taken pressure off people, this enforced slowdown. But that said, I think if you haven't sat with yourself, like, I'm quite introverted in my own way and I really enjoy my own company. Mm. If you're like a full-on extrovert and you're used to occupying every minute of every day with people, then this is a really, really stressful time, I think, and it's a really trying time. So yeah, I think it's okay to admit that you feel like horrendous sometimes, and I kind of oscillate between feeling, you know, really terrified for family, for I'm obviously away from my family, and there's a kind of sense of feeling very separate from not only my family but my country, you know. It's quite dramatic, but like I do feel quite quite separate. And then also I feel quite relieved, and it's there are days when it feels idyllic that I can, you know, nip upstairs and my husband is working and he can have some toast and we can have eggs together for lunch, and then I can be in the garden, and you know, there's a lot of that, the kind of simplicity I am trying to embrace, because you know, and hopefully we can retain a little bit of that, but
hopefully. And you've been through so much, and it, you know, I think a lot of people who I've had in the podcast are very much, you know, oh, I had this thing years ago and now I'm, you know, doing really well. I think it's really important to, like, for people to know that we're all a work in progress, and that, like, this has been quite a relatively new thing for you, this kind of discovery and awareness and, you know, appreciation and identification of, like, how anxiety has probably been there kind of unspoken throughout your life. But what are you've done a lot of work on yourself, and like, it's, you know, it's not easy having a mind, and I have the same mind that's always going on to the next thing. But what are you most proud of with yourself, not career wise but like you wise?
Oh god, funny, sorry, the thing that came to mind when you were saying that and this is not me answering your question, it's just a slight tangent, but I remember when I wrote that thing about anxiety, I was talking about I was speaking to Marion Keyes about it in one of the podcast episodes, and we were talking about oversensitivity or deep sensitivity, and how often in kids that is like it's a weakness. It's something that parents kind of go, oh Jesus, she's going to school now, we're going to have to knock that out of her. We're going to have to kind of, she needs to toughen up, or he needs to toughen up. And this kind of insistence that like sensitivity is a chink, you know, it's something that you have to fix or hide, really. Yeah. And actually, I think that if we can recognize that sensitivity in ourselves, but also in like little humans, and allow them and protect that, I suppose, and allow them to think of it as a superpower rather than as a weakness, I think it's much more comforting, I suppose. Yeah. You know, because I think that my sensitivity is what allows me to have empathy with people, to connect with people when I'm interviewing them, which is what I do for a job. And so that thing that I've kind of carried with me as a bloody, you know, something I need to squash, is actually the thing that's most authentically me, I suppose.
And it's probably the secret to your success then, I would say.
I think so. And I think that it's embracing that sensitivity rather than hoping that you'll grow out of it, or hoping that you'll figure out how to deny it or how to kill it, kind of, which is what I had hoped for a very long time, you know. So that's a slight aside. And then, but maybe that's like, I'm quite proud of coming to that, you know, conclusion. Yeah. But in terms of life things, it's my daughter, really, and she's just turned two. And I would say that those 2 years have been, you know, the hardest and the most intense in many ways, but like the biggest 2 years of my life, not just because of her, you know, because of like all the work that I've had to kind of all the work that I've had to do, but actually how rewarding that has been, I guess.
And like, it'll be amazing for your daughter to, for you to have come to these realizations and to embrace your vulnerability and your sensitivity, so that she grows up then with an appreciation and like a celebrating that almost, rather than continuing that trend of, you know, oh, we have to get that beaten out of her.
Totally. Or she has to hide it. And I see it, you know, now when she, her little lip goes, and she's so, she's really sensitive, like, and she always has been. And, you know, now it's so gorgeous because she's now knows kind of what she needs. And like, obviously she's only two. She does it, like, it's a long old road. So yeah. I'm not saying that I have it sorted at all, but I feel like, you know, yesterday she had like a crazy tantrum and she didn't want to go down to her nap and she wanted to get up, and I went in and I gave her a little hug and she's able to go, huggle, I want to huggle. And aww, she'll come over to you, and she knows that what she wants is like just a little bit of a snug. And so instead, sometimes she would like turn her little lip and kind of almost try to hide that she's crying, which I don't know where that has come from. But then she'll go, I want to huggle. And to be able to know that that's all you want, and to be able to ask for that and to get it, and then like to see it as soon as that need is met, here's a little huggle. It could be like a 3-second hug, or it could be 30 seconds, or it could be more. And she knows what she wants and what she needs and how to ask for it. And that is amazing. Like, and I think I'm kind of learning from her, because I'm going, you know, the other day I said to my husband, I was like, I want to huggle. And like, you know, to be able to go, actually, yeah, I just feel a bit shit, and I think I just need a bit of a, you know, a little boost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like, I do think motherhood, you know, is like, it's quite a trip.
Yeah. I'm both nervous and excited, but mostly terrified.
Do you know what? I don't know. I don't think you need to be terrified, because I think you're further down the track than a lot of people. Like, you know, you have an awareness about yourself and about your anxiety and about what, how you manage that I really didn't have. And it all came crashing down. Yeah. And so I think, you know, her arrival coincided with my inability to deny that that I was in need, I suppose.
I suppose her birth was like your rebirth as well.
100%.
Yeah,
totally. And also I think, you know, for me, a big part of my like discomfort is needing like needing things, needing people. I am self-sufficient. I will work. I don't need money off anybody. I don't need, like, I'm a self-starter. It's why I work for myself. I don't need a boss to give me, like, all of these things that actually I've created this life that is basically built around making sure that I never like need to ask anyone for anything. And it's an incredibly lonely place to end up. And suddenly you have a baby and you're absolutely in need. I'm trying to breastfeed and I'm doing a dismal frigging job of it. And I've got my sister on FaceTime. It's Beast from the East. My parents can't come over. My sister's trying to help me breastfeed online. Like, I need Roy in the middle of the night to go and get me a smoothie. I need him, you know, like actively. I need to say, please, can you help me in a way that I've never done before? I am an equal in this relationship. I am, you know, and suddenly I could not escape the very, you know, that
the vulnerability,
the vulnerability of it was just so overwhelming for me. And that's kind of what triggered everything.
For anyone listening who's thinking, oh my god, I'm so that way inclined, especially with my career, where it's, you know, on to the next promotion, on to the next thing, not appreciating it when it happens because you're already 10 steps ahead, what is there any nugget of advice you could share to help people put that into perspective, or to take away some of that focus?
Well, it's funny because I think if you're that way inclined,
you always will be.
Well, yeah, you definitely have to train yourself, but I think you just need to tap into what the motivation is. And so if you're very goal oriented and you're like focused on your career, I mean, there's no point in me saying go to an ashram in India and like find yourself and come back and live off the land. But if you can actually properly feel into the things that you're doing today. So let's say, you know, like, you got the gig, right? You got, like you were saying earlier on, that there are things, like whether it's a brand thing or whether it's whatever it might be, right? What I was constantly doing was I was already in a different place when I was doing the thing. Like, I never allowed myself to fully feel into what I was doing, and to really enjoy the job, enjoy the success, enjoy the like fruits of your labor, for want of a better term. And so I think if you're not motivated, if that's kind of like, oh yeah, whatever, I'm busy, I've had another thing to do, it's not enough, nothing will ever be enough. If you are motivated in that way, then actually realizing that if you can properly feel in and give yourself time to like luxuriate in today's success, you will just bring more of that quicker.
So true.
It will feel effortless, it will feel easy. And so if that's maybe more motivating than trying to tell somebody to, you know, like sit and do the hard work and sit in silence and whatever else, because I think actually just sitting into it and feeling like thankful and grateful and looking back a little bit at how far you've come rather than how far you still have got to go, I think is really, really important.
I feel like what I'm taking away from this conversation very much is to make some room for gratitude, to continue to allow ourselves to surrender, especially right now more than ever, and to really embrace our vulnerability and like encourage it in other people as well. So
give space, and you don't need to fix people. No. Nobody needs to be fixed, they just need a huggle.
Exactly, and that's actually something that drives me mad. I feel like whenever, you know, in a friend's WhatsApp group, if you kind of go in and say, oh, I'm having a shit time, or this thing happened, everyone is straight on the back burner with a solution or trying to help you solve it. And it's like, I just want to vent. I just want a shoulder or an ear. Sometimes you don't need everything to be solved. You just need to share and allow yourself to be vulnerable, and someone to say, And to say like, that's shit.
And I think sometimes we all have that tendency to kind of go, you know, and this is very, again, I feel it's very Irish. But there's starving kids in Africa, you know, is kind of whatever you have, you're not that. And it totally diminishes your right, or it feels like
everything you feel is valid.
It's valid, and you're allowed to feel it, and nobody else's pain is more valid because it's bigger or it's harder. And you know, it's okay to feel whatever you're feeling.
Angela, thank you so much for giving me your time today. I've loved hearing about your story. I'm so sorry that you've had like a hard time, but it sounds like you are absolutely like owning it now, and it almost like necessary to have had this happen to you so that you can like regain that feeling of being yourself.
And you know what? I think that's absolutely true. And I remember I went on, sorry, I know we have to say goodbye, but I went on a yoga retreat just before I had Ruby. And I remember having this kind of like breakdown with all of the people in the circle. And I was like, oh, I just feel like, you know, when I go home, I'm really upset. And then I go out and I'm all happy and I don't know which is which. And this woman said, no mud, no lotus. And she was like, basically, that deep sensitivity in you is what enables you to do the other stuff really well. And I think I'm only starting to really appreciate that the like tough stuff that I've gone through is actually what allows for right now things to feel a little bit sweeter. So don't be afraid of like the shit storm, even if you're in the middle of it, because you will come out of it and everything will feel, you know, actually
as it should be.
You'll be better for it.
Oh, thank you so much. It just, it's so refreshing, a breath of fresh air, and to have such an honest conversation. And I hopefully our paths will cross in person soon when we're out of this horrible situation, and enjoy the downtime and enjoy the gardening. And thank you so much for sharing all your advice.
Thank you so much, and best of luck with the Baba.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.